Hello, and welcome to Screaming in the Cloud with your host, cloud economist Corey Quinn. This weekly show features conversations with people doing interesting work in the world of cloud, thoughtful commentary on the state of the technical world, and ridiculous titles for which Corey refuses to apologize. This is Screaming in the Cloud.
This episode of Screaming in the Cloud is sponsored by O'Reilly's Velocity 2019 conference. To get ahead today, your organization needs to be cloud native. The 2019 Velocity program in San Jose from June 10th to 13th is going to cover a lot of topics we've already covered on previous episodes of the show, ranging from Kubernetes and site reliability engineering over to observability and performance. The idea here is to help you stay on top of the rapidly changing landscape of this zany world called cloud. It's a great place to learn new skills, approaches, and of course, technologies. But what's also great about almost any conference is going to be the hallway track. Catch up with people who are solving interesting problems, trade stories, learn from them, and ideally learn a little bit more than you knew going into it. There are going to be some great guests, including at least a few people who've been previously on this podcast, including Liz Fong Jones and several more. Listeners to this podcast can get 20% off of most passes with the code CLOUD20. That's CLOUD20 during registration. To sign up, go to velocityconf.com/cloud. That's velocityconf.com/cloud. Thank you to Velocity for sponsoring this podcast. Welcome to Screaming in the Cloud. I'm Corey Quinn. I'm joined this week by Omar Levy-Hevroni, who's a DevSecOps engineer at Saluto by Asurion. Welcome to the show, Omar.
Hello, Corey, and thank you for having me. It's a great honor to be on this podcast. I'm a huge fan.
Thanks. It's super kind of you to say that. So in addition to the day job, or I guess in a component with the day job, you wound up releasing an open source tool called Camus, which I'm almost certainly mispronouncing. There's some people going to say it's called Camus. Some will say Camus. It's K-A-M-U-S, which out of the gate is already a better name than almost anything Amazon has ever given to anything. What does it do?
Let's start with the name, because I guess I don't know how much of the people hearing us right now speaking fluent Hebrew. Camus in Hebrew mean a secret. And we called it Camus because it's a tool that helps managing secrets on Kubernetes. We all love secrets, and we all want to keep them confident. And Camus came to solve exactly this problem. So this is like the very high-level overview. And it's different from all the other tools because Camus lets you encrypt a secret to a specific application. So only this application can decrypt it. And this is a very unique approach to secret management.
That makes a lot of sense. So take me back to the beginning here. There are a number of different ways to address secrets management of varying degrees of validity. Some are make an awful lot of sense. Some are less sensible. It ranges from using GPG, which is heavy and difficult, to wind up encrypting secrets that then applications wind up retrieving. There's just embedding it in your source code and hoping that no one ever finds it. There's putting it in insecure S3 buckets and just acting shocked when that winds up getting discovered, and 50,000 other horrible things you can do. But then there's good stuff. There's things like AWS Systems Manager Parameter Store. There's Systems Manager in the AWS side. I have to assume Azure and GCP and the rest have something vaguely similar. What does this do differently?
Yes, you pretty much covered all the different options. And I think when thinking about what secret solution to choose, you need to think about the culture of the company you are working at. For example, the way we work at Saluto is a way we like to call super devs, which means developers do everything. They do the fun work of writing the code, but they also do the hard work of deploying it and monitoring it. And when you have developers who do everything, you need to choose a solution that on one hand they can use easily, and on the other hand they can use it easily but still be secure. So for example, if we go with GPG, like you mentioned, you need to find a robust solution that will let all the developers have access to the encryption keys and keep it secure and all that, and it gets complex pretty fast. And this is why I'm saying that the culture or the way you work is a very important factor when thinking about which solution to choose. So pretty much you can think about different approaches, and the approaches I like the most are the GitOps which is, I think, one of the hype buzzwords existing today, maybe GitOps and Bitcoin and blockchain. GitOps is the idea of managing everything via code. So you have code describing your cloud architecture and everything else. And when you do things with GitOps, you get a lot of benefit of Git, like audit and review and rollback and all that good things. And this is why I like also to manage secrets via Git. So solutions like AWS SSM or Azure Key Vault, which is pretty much the equivalent of Azure to SSM, are really good choice, but they don't have any GitOps support. So if you go on this path, you need to solve also authentication and authorization and a lot of other things that you don't want to mess with. So I think this is pretty much the reason not to go this path.
There are a number of different things that I will look at whenever I see something that purports to handle security and discount them almost out of hand. The easy low-hanging fruit one among those is rolling your own crypto. One of the nice things I like about Camus is that it uses whatever KMS version being used by the underlying provider, to wit, that's Azure Key Vault KMS, there's Google Cloud KMS, and AWS KMS for the big three. You're not generally rolling your own crypto solution here, with the singular exception of running your own keys for just local development, which you very clearly call out in the documentation that is not what's something to be done other than when you're in a hurry for testing purposes. So first, can I just congratulate you on not doing the most ridiculous thing imaginable?
Yes, at least we tried. Actually, this is a pretty interesting aspect. Like, the whole idea of Camus was to say, hey, I have no idea how to do encryption good. You know, I do security and I do AppSec for 2.5 years, but still I'm saying out loud, I don't have any idea about cryptography, and I don't want to do these things alone. So this is why we prefer to defer all the hard cryptography work to the cloud. And the interesting part is that in this area, GCP was the best experience. In GCP, you have no control on the cryptography. You just tell KMS, hey, encrypt this, encrypt this, and you have zero control about what happened behind the scene. In my opinion, it's the best experience because there are less chances you will do mistakes. For example, in AWS, you need to write the envelope encryption yourself. So the master key is encrypted in AWS, but you are doing the data key encryption in your code. And I guess we might have a mistake there. We tried really hard to do it good, but, you know, mistakes happen. And this is a very interesting aspect of looking on all the three clouds and looking which one gives the easiest developer experience.
One thing that I found fascinating about Camus compared to an awful lot of other projects that have come out of the open source world is they start off being built for AWS, and that's it. Then eventually they add a second cloud provider, begrudgingly, and then it sort of always feels like a secondary thing. This came out of Azure first, and then I think, correct me if I'm wrong, then it was GCP second and AWS third?
Yes, we started with Azure because at Soluto we work mainly with Azure. It's the cloud we use the most. We started with the cloud we are using because we first wanted to make sure that Camus is usable and it's working as we expected. And then when we understood we were going to release it to open source, it was clear that we can't support only Azure if we want people to use it. Because unfortunately, not everyone loves Azure as we love. So yes, then we added a GCP because someone asked for it, but then never used it, which was pretty disappointing.
That sort of at times feels a bit like the GCP story, but that feels a little mean past a certain point.
Yeah, it was really disappointing because I did it really fast and hope he will use it, and then he vanished. So if you're hearing us, I'm still waiting for your review of the GCP implementation. And then 2 months ago, we added AWS, which, as I said, was the hardest, I think, to implement. And now we support all the three major cloud providers, and we look forward to add support for other KMS, so HashiCorp, Vault Encryption as a Service, or any other HSM encryption thingy you have that you want to add supported. It should be really easy. It's usually around a couple of hours to add support for it, and you're done.
Something else that I found fascinating about this is that unlike virtually everything modern that is written in Go, or everything designed that's written in Rust but never actually built because no one wants to stop talking about Rust long enough to write anything in it, you wound up writing Camus in .NET.
Yes.
Why was that?
Yes. Well, the auto reason, historically, I started developing in .NET, and I sticked with it, and it's still the language that the most easy to me to write in. But .NET is actually a pretty awesome language, and a lot of people hate it because it belong to Microsoft. But since .NET Core and the open source of .NET, it's become really, really easy to use and a really handy tool. It's still a bit heavy compared to other tools. A simple project has a lot of files and all that. So compared to one Golang file, it's a lot more heavy, but you have a lot of things that are harder to do in other languages, and this is why I still like it. It was a pretty hard choice because choosing a language that not a lot of people will use means that you will have less contribution. I already have some people saying, I would maybe consider contributing a PR, but I'm not sure how to write things in .NET. So there are some downsides to choosing this language, but this was what easy for us at that time. And maybe in the future, we will consider rewrite it in Golang or something else so we can have more people be able to contribute to Comus.
Realistically, I find that languages make sense. Picking a particular language makes sense when there's a compelling reason to do so. And you just named one of them, where having an ecosystem of people in the space who are able to contribute to a project, that's a viable strategy. But I have zero tolerance these days, or frankly, most of my career, for language bigotry, where, oh, this is an amazing tool that does the thing I want it to do, but it's written in Perl, so never mind, it must be crappy. Or, oh, it's written in the wrong version of Python. Or, oh, Ruby is for children. We're not going to go and use that at all. And none of those statements are ever true, and none of those statements are ever helpful. It feels almost like it's a form of gatekeeping, where the entire purpose is to make people feel bad about what language they've chosen to write things in. In fact, we want to go by sheer number of expensive things that will break written in it. Java is pretty much the clear winner. Between that and still the things that run our entire world written in COBOL, I don't think that there's a compelling argument to be made that only the cool modern languages are the ones that matter. I'm a big fan of seeing things that aren't written in the usual suspects, and this is absolutely one of them. I've taken a bit of a look through the code base. It seems clean. It seems well-written. I understand what it's doing, despite not being conversant in .NET myself, which tells me that either the language is not that hard to learn, or you've gone significantly out of your way to make this approachable to people who aren't just you.
I think this is a fair point you touch. For me, it's still very hard to read Golang code. And I'm working with Kubernetes for more than a year, so I had to read a lot of Golang code. I think it's the language, but I cannot say that for sure because I don't have enough experience with Golang. But again, it's just only my experience. Golang is still very hard for me to understand and write and read. And this is places where I think language do matter. If you have a language that you know well and you know all the tiny points of what to do and what not to do, it's very hard not to use that language and use something else because you will probably produce a crappier product. So there are places when languages matter and it's more what you control and not what is popular.
The problem that I've always had with popularity-driven development is that it leads almost to groupthink. We're starting to see this not just with languages, but with other things as well, where if you're not using AWS, you're clearly doing it wrong. Well, I don't know that that's necessarily true. Or if you're building any monolith that, no, microservices are the way and the light of the future. Or, oh, if you're not going with serverless, you're completely missing the entire point of the modern revolution. And I don't like any of those things. They smack far too heavily of orthodoxy, and it's getting away from solving business problems and into the realm of religion. And that doesn't seem to be serving anyone particularly well in a technical context or in a business context.
Well, I'm a religious Orthodox Jewish, so I'm pretty fine with being Orthodox and going with religion. But
There's validity to that. The question, though, is at some point, it blurs the line between things that we have to take on faith, and I think that religion is inherently going to be one of those, versus things that lead to definable business outcomes, and doing something just because the thought leader on the stage said it was the way to do things. That's always been a problem for me, because our choices are built by constraints in a technical context, and the fact that we don't wind up making decisions based upon other people's constraints or even our own constraints leads to disaster. If someone gets on stage and like when they did back in, I want to say 2014-ish, and talks about how Docker is amazing and terrific and solves everyone's problems, well, it didn't. What about stateful workloads? What about networking? What about orchestration of these things? What about monitoring? How do you emit statistics? How do you troubleshoot when the thing that's running was turned off 20 minutes before you knew that there was an error? And there was a giant list of problems that have largely been solved today. But at that point, the whatever your problem is, Docker containers are going to solve it, was sort of what everyone was saying. And I didn't find that that resonated with me, because just throw everything away that I've built previously and build everything again in this new context, this new environment, I could see doing that, but I didn't see a compelling business case for it. And now here we are, 6 years later almost, and we're talking extensively about Kubernetes in some cases being the answer to everything. It's every problem that I may possibly have. I don't see it. There are absolutely use cases for which Kubernetes is a valuable path forward and a great use case, but certainly not all of them. And the level of complexity still feels slightly higher than most companies are probably going to want to dive into unless they are themselves tech companies at heart. Is that something that you're seeing? Do you agree, disagree? Don't feel you have to agree with me just because I'm the one with my hand on the mute switch.
No, I'm pretty much agree. I think it's... level of maturity as a software developer or a security developer or as any other, I don't know how to name it. But the hard part is not always answering for what it's good, but for what it's not good. It hit me first when I heard a really good interview question when you need to answer when microservices are not a good choice. And there are pretty good answers to these questions, but I heard this question and it got me thinking. It wasn't my job interview. But I heard it in another, like, I read it somewhere, I don't remember when. And I started thinking, it was pretty interesting thing to think about, like, what situations are not good cases to use microservice, but monolith. And as you said, it was very interesting because it was going against the dogma and starting to say, hey, microservice is not always that good and it has a lot of overhead. And I think it's a fair point. Actually, I like the example of Kind. Kind is an open source that lets you run a Kubernetes cluster using Docker, and it's really good in the CI. And what I liked about Kind documentation website is that they have a whole list of alternatives projects that are similar to Kind, but do other things. And you can look on all the alternatives and choose between the alternatives and Kind, the one that best works for your use case. And I wanted to do it also on Camus documentation website, and I forgot I need to do it. But I think it's really important to say, like, what you are not good for and what use case you don't want to use Camus or Kind or Kubernetes or whatever.
I absolutely love the idea of an interview question where there's this thing that you're good at, that you're passionate about. Great. Tell me about its shortcomings. Tell me about when it's not a good idea. Because that tells you a lot about a candidate, just as far as, can they see both sides of an issue? Are they so blinded by zealotry for this thing that they're in love with that they can't see another perspective? And if you wind up making a technical decision down the road while they're working with you, are you suddenly going to wind up having a screaming meltdown because that is not acceptable? Finding ways to tolerate and deal with disagreement is incredibly important for almost every environment I've ever been in. So I just want to say I love the idea of asking that kind of question.
Yeah, we can do it on Camus. Like, Camus, as I said in start, it's not good for everyone. If you already have Vault and Vault work for you and you have a culture when you have a specific team who manage the secrets, it might be easier to continue using SSM or something that is not GitOps, and it might work better for your solution. Another caveat of Camus is that Camus do one-way encryption. Once you encrypt the secret, there is no admin account that lets you decrypt it back. And it's not work for everyone. For us, it was good enough, but it has downside. Sometimes you need this value decrypted, and Camus, by design, don't let you do that. So it's important to understand the idea behind the design of Camus and understand if this idea fit your workflow or not, because it's not always fit.
Pay attention, listener. The reason to look into Camus is because you heard it on this podcast, yeah, that's a good idea. Deploying it blindly because the super confident sounding people on the podcast said you should, that's a bad reason. It all comes down to making sure whatever you're using works for your use case. Understand what it is. Understand how it breaks. Understand how, when it breaks, because everything breaks, that's what computers do, will impact your production environment. It all comes down to understanding constraints, understanding trade-offs.
Yeah, this is a part of the reason we decided to release with Camus a full-blown threat model of all the different threats and controls we think about. So you as the user can go and read the threat model and say, hey, this is an unacceptable threat by us. And I don't going to deploy Camus and have this threat available. I'm not feeling good with it. And you can look on the controls and understand the different things we decided to do in order to mitigate them. And you might don't like some of the controls, or you might even think about threats or controls that we didn't think about. So it's all part of the idea of giving our users all the information. It's all there. Just read them. And with all that being said, go use Camus. It's really amazing. So don't listen to other things I said before.
Exactly. Adoption is where it all comes from. Sooner or later, we'll put a foundation around it and get people to start supporting it with giant corporate piles of contributions. Changing gears a little bit, you introduced yourself at the beginning as a DevSecOps engineer. And I tend to come from an old school world where I started my career as a grumpy Unix systems administrator. We also call that a Unix systems administrator because they're all grumpy. There's no second kind. And over time, I watched the world evolve. We started calling the same thing I was already doing DevOps. In many shops, they started calling it SRE or site reliability engineering. And it feels to me, and this is probably a slightly naive, that the role hasn't particularly changed in 15 years. Sure, the tools we use are different. But if you say, well, back when you were a sysadmin, you didn't have to write code. I didn't. I was doing an awful lot of stuff in Perl. And if you start working on Unix systems administration, you generally in that era won't get very far without at least a working knowledge of C. And it turns into, it seems everything old is new again. So then we called it DevOps, which people will argue vehemently is a title, is not a title. Well, at least we're debating rather than doing work. We don't want to do work. We want to argue with people. And now we're seeing DevSecOps as adding additional words to that construct, which on the one hand, I like. The idea that security has to be baked in from the beginning is a fundamental tenet of safe systems design. And I'm curious, though, how did you wind up coming by that job title? When did you start using it?
It's complicated, like all the good things. The funny part is that today I'm part of the DevOps team at Saluto. We talk a lot with our manager about changing it to SRE, and I asked him if I change my title from DevOps to SRE, whether it will increase my salary, and he refused to answer this question. So today I'm not SRE, but if it will increase my salary, I will.
Oh, it absolutely will to an extent. I've been a number of DevOps days where they've done job title polls, and going from sysadmin to DevOps or SRE was something on the order of a salary boost of at least a third taken in the aggregate. So it's weird, but the things we call ourselves change how people view us and, more importantly, how people pay us.
So I think I will go with DevSecOps SRE. I think it will be good enough.
Oh, I like that. FinOps in there too somewhere. I think someone's trying to make that happen somewhere.
Yeah. And the last funny part is that I don't have any official degree, so I am a bit ashamed to call myself engineer. But, you know, it's a different discussion about the importance of doing a bachelor degree in computer science and all that.
I don't know about that necessarily. I have an eighth grade education myself. I've always toyed with the idea of going and getting a computer science degree at some point in my career. And there are aspects it would be helpful for, but from my perspective, it seems, for some folks, it's more of a credential. In my 20s, it was rough not having the degree. I had to talk my way around it a lot. Now that I'm in my 30s, I can bring this up in public that I don't even technically have a high school diploma. And it's a punchline. It's not a career-limiting move. It, by and large, careers do get easier with the right credentials. But I don't think that it's ever an absolute, at least not as we tend to think of it as. It just means we may have to be a little bit more creative.
Yeah, my parents still disappointed and hope that in some point I will get the sense of it and go and do an official degree, but it's just too hard. I never managed to get over all the hard math courses, so I don't think it will happen at any point.
Oh, I'm in the same boat. My parents still think I'm an accountant, which, yeah, we're going to go with that. It's a lot easier to explain.
Yeah. Anyway, the job title is complex. I started at Soloto as a developer, and then someone offered me to be part of the security champion. You heard about the idea of security champion?
I have not. Tell me more.
Okay. So it's relatively new. It's not that new, but it's coming from the idea that the security team, especially in companies like Assurant, are usually very, very isolated, located somewhere in the United States, and they cannot control all the developers all around the globe. So usually the solution to that is either hire a lot more security people who will be located in each site, which is very hard, or taking developers and converting them into security, taking them to the dark side. Sorry. So this is what I did. I did a SANS course of 1 week, so I have a certificate that I'm an officially pen tester, and I can use this title if I want. And since then, I started to do all things related to security, AppSec, and all the fun stuff of DevSecOps, which going from security testing to running things in the pipeline. And the things I like the most, my job in our DevOps team, which I think fundamentally differs from sysadmin, is what I started with. We have a lot of developers, and our job as the DevOps team, and especially my job as the security person, is to help them and guide them. We don't have any control on what they do. We cannot tell them what is wrong and what is right. We can't just help them and provide them with best practices. And if they come and say, hey, I want to use this cool new technology, we are the bad guys who come and say, hey, what about monitoring? How you can monitor that? How you can deploy that? Is it secure? And all that question. And these things, I think, are fundamentally different from sysadmins. Because sysadmins usually were not responsible to do this work. And this is why I like to call myself DevSecOps engineer. Although I'm not that happy with this title, but I think it's better than security champion, which was the title I used before.
I think that may wind up being for the best, all things considered. We're about out of time, but if people are interested in what you have to say, where can they find you to learn more?
So the best place, my Twitter account. I try not to tweet too much in Hebrew, but I do it also. It's by language, and I try not to post. So you can follow me there.
And that's OMERLH. We'll put the link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, and I also have a personal blog, which I try to post new things once in a while. And you can also ping me there or ping me on OWASP, Kubernetes, or Slack, or CNCF Slack. I'm on each one of them. And of course, GitHub and all the other things, you know, where everyone are. And of course, LinkedIn. Yeah, I think some people are also there.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you for having me. It was a really big honor. And as I said in the start, I'm a huge fan of you. It was pretty nervous to be on this podcast after the last episode with Jess.
Yeah, you're talking, there's always a bigger fish. I've got to say, I was nervous as heck talking with Jess. She's incredible, and everyone I talk to is incredible, but she's been one of those people I've been following for a long time. And it turns out everyone has someone that they look up to, like, oh, I could never talk to them. I'd never be going to be at their tier. There's always a bigger fish. And something I'm learning is that reaching out and talking to people and asking for help, everyone worth admiring is a human being who's willing to have a conversation. Don't ever hold yourself back from that. Omer Levy Hevroni, DevSecOps engineer at Soluto by Assurant. I'm Corey Quinn. This is Screaming in the Cloud.
This has been this week's episode of Screaming in the Cloud. You can also find more Corey at screaminginthecloud.com or wherever fine snark is sold. This has been a HumblePod production. Stay humble.